You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist. Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 72, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-Year Streak, without a bad day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Man, Mike, every day is a good day to be alive. Happy Halupulivati Vitae podcast.
Ugh, it's going to be a stinker.
There's better 72s, but if it's a guy who's currently on the roster, I have to go for it. It's Happy Big V podcast.
I can feel the pressure already.
This is, we're like doing the All-22 show. We're doing a bunch of reviews today as well, right? But we also wanted to, we started recording like in the middle of our pre-show chat because Mike was going to tell me that he took the 538 personality test, which is that like weird thing with the radar charts. And I want the answers to be kept on the internet forever. So Michael, even though you have the ability to just take all this out in post anyway, now share with me what 538 thinks about your personality.
So one of the major takeaways for me and one of the funniest ones was the agreeableness trait. And they have these agreeableness subtrait. So it's in a triangle. At the top of the triangle is compassion. On the bottom left is respectfulness. And on the bottom right is trust. Okay.
Three words that come to mind when I think of Michael Kist. Those three exactly.
Now, respectfulness, I scored a 50. That's solid, right? So
out of 100?
Yeah, out of 100.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
It's a nice little, you know, medium area. It's close to the average-ish, I guess. Compassion, I'm at 25. That ain't great.
No. Trust.
Trust. Zero. It is the smallest sliver.
That's shocking to me. Like if you would have asked me to guess which of the three you would have scored the highest, then I would have said trust.
I respect the fact that I don't trust you.
Right, like this is about whether or not you trust people, not about your trustworthiness. I experience you as very trustworthy. But perhaps you don't experience anybody else as trustworthy, which, I mean, let's be real, Mike. I'm constantly one whole minute late to the podcast, so no wonder you have such a harsh and critical view on the people of the world.
And one of the quotes in here that kills me, the first quote about it, because it gives you a whole paragraph that describes your personality, how they see it. So it says, low agreeableness, and the quote is, quote, if life seems a little unfair, that's because it sort of is to you. Personally, unquote. Like,
yeah. That is pretty good.
Hit me with both barrels. Ben, we got that out of the way. You got to take that test and we got to see which parts of your personality are a little bit psycho like mine so I can feel better. I feel like yours are just going to be like awesome and it's going to make me feel worse.
No, probably myself. Not. I feel like I think I'll do okay in compassion. Trust might get dicey. Depends. I can be very like just like everybody sucks. But respect now, that's I think we're gonna find some trouble there. I think we're I tend to be a little bit too holding people in too high of an esteem, and so we'll see what happens. I'm very curious because your results weren't what I expected, so we'll see.
I'll have to show you the other ones too. Maybe we'll talk about them at another time. But this is going to be the All 22 review show. We're gonna do a small portion of that, not as intensive as we usually do. We were supposed to do it on the last show, Kist and Solak Show 71. But we ended up talking about Nick Foles, his future. And then we started power ranking the draft needs for the Eagles, and that kind of got out of hand because we're big draft heads. So that's what happens when that happens. By the way, Ben, got to see all your boys from the draft network, John Ledyard, Kyle Krabs, Joe Marino, Trevor Sikkema. Saw all of them down there at Shrine Week. We had breakfast at an IHOP. It was nice and pleasant. We joked, we laughed, we had a good time. I'm excited for what you guys are doing over at the Draft Network. Is there anything that you can, because I know a little bit, is there anything that you can kind of give listeners a peek into what they can expect from the Draft Network? Because we're going to have you who work for them, but also guys like Ledyard, Krabs, Marino, and whatnot on the show with us as we prepare for the draft as well. So it'll be a nice little peek into what they have to offer.
Yeah, and now so the Draft Network, we're at a very exciting time because it is draft season, which means we're in the throes of kind of our heyday, our hot season, which is great. And so currently on the site, what you'll see is you'll have updated big boards. I'm at top 100. A lot of the chiefs, the full-timers are at top 150s. You also find the player database, which is a database of every potential draft eligible player in the entire world, which is like 6,000 people from, you know, FBS and FCS football. But also more specifically, there's going to be our consensus top big board, which has all of the names linked to all of the scouting reports. So if you want to get a feel for who's good in this class, who's got good film, who's going to go high, and you go check out the database, you'll not only be able to see the names and see who it is, but you'll also be able to click on their scouting reports, see what they're strong at, see what they're weak at, you know, kind of project them and see what system they fit the best in, how they're going to impact the team. You're also going to find like a full week of Senior Bowl coverage, including our live shows, immediately after Senior Bowl practices, which will be streaming on Twitch and on Periscope on Twitter. And so if you follow us on Twitch, the Draft Network, or on Twitter at Draft Network LLC, then you'll be able to see our immediate Senior Bowl reaction and all the posts that come from that. And then in February, Phase 2 gets launched, which Phase 2 is much more under wraps now. I think you guys will learn more about Phase 2 in a little bit over a week.
Can I tell you?
Oh, did they give you a little sneak'em peek'em?
I got a little sneak'em peek'em at Phase 2, and I am very, very excited about it.
Yeah,
and I cannot
man, wait.
To use it and to publish content around it. Like, it's going to be amazing. And it's not just for guys like me and you. It's for you as well, gentle listeners. You are going to love this. It's incredible. It's going to blow your mind. But Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Phase 2 has some app features, has some interactive user interfaces, opportunity to prepare for the draft just as a regular fan in a way that you simply never have before. So we're very excited about what's coming down the mount, and that'll be we'll announce an official launch date, like I said, in about a week or so. But if you're around during February getting ready for the combine, then you won't miss anything. So yeah, if you follow at Draft Network LLC on Twitter, the Draft Network on Instagram, and the Draft Network on Twitch, you'll never miss a beat. But we've been rolling for 5-6 months now, you know what I mean? Like, it's always draft season. It's just this is the time you kind of put things in second gear. So yeah, man, I'm pumped. Senior Bowl week's gonna be a ton of fun. I'm jealous you got to be with everybody on Shrine Week. I've been up here going to class and doing other pointless wastes of time. So I'm excited to take a week off from class and be down in Mobile.
Well, I'm glad we can spend this time together right here and also next week in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, where both me and you will be covering it. So again, the topics for today's show: we're going to do some light All-22 film review of the divisional round loss to the Saints, where the Eagles were eliminated from the playoffs, unfortunately. We're also going to get into some iTunes reviews. We're going to read some of the real funny ones. We told you guys that we would do this. We also asked for some mean tweets, so we might throw some of those out there as well. People weren't as mean
to
us.
When you say we asked for some mean tweets, specify what you mean exactly.
You asked
for some mean tweets and tagged me in the tweet. Don't worry, I'll do it for you. That's what you did.
But people weren't as mean as I thought they would be. I thought they would be coming out in droves to make fun of you, and it didn't pan out that way, but we got some good ones anyway. So that's for later. Let's finally get into this All-22 before we get distracted in some 20-minute sidebar yet again. I want to start with the quarterback play from Nick Foles. So looking at the day from Nick Foles against the Saints, which is possibly and very likely his last day wearing an Eagles uniform, I'll just throw some numbers out there and then we can kind of talk about some individual throws if we want. But under pressure, 32% of the time, so a little high, not game breaking, but that's under steady fire. Under pressure, he was 5 for 10 for 76 yards and a touchdown there. So 107.9 quarterback rating. So the pressure really didn't rattle Foles too much in the box score. And when it really worked for Foles was play action, which they kicked up a notch. 36% of his dropbacks were play action concepts. And these stats, Ben, with play action, check this out, and you'll see the difference. With play action, 9 for 11, 105 yards, 9.5 yards per attempt. That's very high. One touchdown, 136.7 quarterback rating. Without play action, 9 for 20, 96 yards, 4.8 yards per attempt, two interceptions.
Might not be as good.
Massive difference there. And when you hear that, you might think that they should have ran more play action, but they already ran it at such a high rate, especially compared to the rest of the season, that I really wouldn't buy that. And I also think it has to do with his time to throw being a little bit higher this week than it has been since he took over as starter later in the year. 2.45 seconds time to throw, which is still the second quickest time to throw on the week, just about, I want to say about 0.25 higher than it has been recently. I mean, the main thing in this one for me, beyond all the analytics, he was just inaccurate for a good portion of the day. Really bad placement, a lot of balls, underthrew some that we can talk about, and I want to talk about the interception, but he was off for the better part of this game. And I saw the tweet the other day talking about this. I think it was Patrick Claibon of NFL Network, where he said, quote, "Soon we'll have draft comps like this. Floor, Nick Foles. Ceiling, Nick Foles.
Listen, I did the I have no idea where memes come from, so I can't tell you what meme it is. But the one where there's the guy and he's an animated figure and he's like sweating profusely and there's two buttons in front of him and you can change what the labels on the buttons are. It's the best joke I've ever made in my entire life. It's just that I labeled the guy Nick Foles and I made one of the buttons really good throw and I made the other button really bad throw. And he's just there sweating trying to deliberate which button to press because there's no in between. It's just like, wow. That throw could not have been more perfectly placed. Or, wow, they never had a chance to catch that football. It's one of the two.
Absolutely. So, look, we got yelled at by the Foles faction. That's what I'm calling them now. For calling him inconsistent. But that's the thing. You can't really yell about that when he's playing well for such a small stretch. When we know that one of these games could very well be right around the corner. Hell, one of these throws could be right around the corner in that game where he's playing really well. That's just kind of like what Foles is, and we saw a ton of that this game. Now, the Saints, and we could talk about their coverage and whatnot, I thought they did a really good job, really sticky in coverage and all that stuff, and there were some tight throws that had to be made. They just weren't made in a lot of these cases, Ben.
Yeah, and so I think when you look at it, and we're talking about the pressure splits and we're talking about the play-action split, what the Saints were able to do most effectively in terms of generating pressure on Nick Foles and that being able to throw him off, like when you go into the tape, I think it's not that they were blitzing and
they weren't. Yeah, third down, right. I think I only charted one or two blitzes. I think it was some more early down stuff, but definitely not on third down.
They blitzed earlier in the game and they stepped away from it, which was the correct in-game adjustment. Hats off to Dennis Allen, defense coordinator, for doing it. Blitzing Nick Foles is a bad idea. And the reason blitzing Nick Foles is a bad idea is because he's a smart quarterback who's very good pre-snap and he knows where his hots are. Like the number one example is the touchdown to Jordan Matthews, where play side was the other side of the field. They're running little, you know, basic levels like triangle read to the one side of the field, like two short breaking in cuts, one intermediate breaking in cut, run levels. It was a two high look before the snap. At the snap, the Saints rotate down from two high into one high, into single high. So there's a change post snap because they're bringing five. And so they're bringing the safety down into the middle of the field. It's cover one man. Once Foles hits play action, once he looks up and he sees that the Saints have gone from two high to one high, he knows he's going to have outside leverage, single coverage on that deep post. And he even had a shorter throw, again, outside breaking, underneath that post. Again, away from the play side. Play side was the levels concept over there, beating two high coverage. Well, they exchanged to one high, and so Foles knows to come to the other side and just throw a faith throw. Like, that's a one-on-one, and you expect Jordan Matthews to beat PJ Williams. And Foles puts a great ball out there. Again, he hit the really good throw button.
Yep.
And it's a touchdown, right? It's fantastic throw, perfect process. And that's where, you know, Foles is successful in terms of when you blitz him, you're not going to be able to play much coverage on the back end that requires a lot of post-snap processing. You're allowing throws to Foles to throw hot, and that's the thing at which he's the most effective. That's where he's very strong. You can run, like, you know, zone blitzes, go like three underneath, three high if you want to. But like I said in the pregame show, the Saints don't really do that when they blitz. The Saints go to cover one man. They go to cover zero. And so stepping away from the blitz and running far more coverages where they were up near the line of scrimmage, where their safeties were close to the line of scrimmage, and their linebackers were buzzing quickly to the flats, prevented Foles from getting the ball out quickly. And I think that's where pressure gets involved. That's because you're able to take away what Foles wants to do pre-snap. That's where you're starting to able to fluster him. Even if you're not getting like great pressure moving him off his spot, Foles is not a good post-snap processor. So the greatest pressure you can put on him is to force him to make decisions after the snap. And that's where I think you saw Foles with some poor throws, forcing the ball into coverage where it wasn't necessarily the best choice. And that's when you have him constantly going beyond the sticks, kind of going to his first read, instead of just kind of like facilitating into space like a point guard the way we typically see him do.
And let's go to turn your pages to second quarter, 13:45 in the game. This is the interception to Zach Ertz. And I want to talk about this because it kind of hits on some of the points that you were talking about. Pre-snap, right? So what they have for the Eagles is a condensed alignment, two wide receivers set. They've got the double wing tight ends. They're on opposite side of the sides of the formation. So this is eventually going to go to Ertz on like an out and up type deal. Pre-snap, the Saints are showing single high safety. Right before the snap, you see them start to rotate into two high. Now this is based on the leverage and what I can tell, this is cover two zone, like really basic stuff, right?
Yeah.
So Ertz releases, Marshawn Lattimore chucks Matthews to the inside and then fades off to Ertz, who is breaking out. So Ertz collisions him at the top about 10 to 12 yards past the line of scrimmage and then shoots up. Now, with those two high safeties, that means that turkey hole, right, between the corner and the safety is where the throw needs to be. It needs to be over that corner. But what Lattimore does, and this is something that the Eagles corners were not very good at doing, was Lattimore didn't care about anything coming underneath because he knew he had extra coverage because the Saints dropped an extra guy into coverage. They only rush three, so they have an additional underneath zone so they can spread that
drop
coverage
eight,
out more.
Right. Yeah. And drop the thing about drop eight is this. I'm sure the drop eight checks like exist. I'm sure like they know what to do, but drop eight is just a coverage where like for me, there's so little data on drop eight that I can't tell you what the procedure is when you drop eight. Like what I know is, yeah, absolutely what you're bringing up in terms of Lattimore knows he can fly deep and he can support there because he has an extra underneath defender. But like the Leighton Vander Esch interception was against drop eight. That was Carson Wentz's one. The Nick Foles interception, Zach Cunningham, was against drop eight. Like when teams are dropping that defensive tackle, there's a struggle for the Eagles defense.
Or for the Eagles offense, you mean?
Eagles offense. I pulled a kiss. Sorry.
So yeah, what you see is Lattimore is able to drop. So Foles drops back and just he has to move in the pocket slightly. And it's just a big underthrow, man. It's 7 yards underthrown. And because Lattimore is able to drop underneath, he's able to go up and make that play. And that's a tough play for Ertz too, because he has number one at that point when he's running upfield. It's really hard to just plant your foot and go up and get it. Like there's a gear down process to that Zach Ertz has to go through, so it's hard for him to really come back and impact the catch point. But he goes up with Lattimore just makes a great play. So great play call that really confused the Eagles. Bad throw by Foles, fantastic play by Marshawn Lattimore. So that's kind of what we saw in the passing game. Any other passing game notes that you wanted to have before we started to move on in this condensed all 22 review?
Yeah, no, I simply think when it comes to this, like the simple reality of it was a bad ball. It should be six. Yeah. You know what I mean? In the same way that Drew Brees' interception in the opening play of the game should have been six, this should have been six. And that would have put Philadelphia at this point, I believe, up 21-0 with a little bit into the second quarter. And we said, like, you know, I remember during the game I got yelled at because I said, like, right now up 14-0, you know, first half, your number one prerogative is not running the score up. It's ball control. The last thing you want to do on this drive is turn the football over. Last thing you want to do is give a spark. And little did we know that a turnover would turn into two fourth down conversions, one of them a fake punt, the other one on the goal line, and the Saints would walk away with seven on what ended up being a huge drive for them. I mean, this play right here killed all Philadelphia's momentum, and it was simply a bad throw. Yeah. Right, and what's curious is you can go back to a game that I believe was like 14-0 or 21-7 or something against the Saints in week 11, where Philadelphia really needed to get something going on offense. It was a different situation, but basically Carson Wentz took so much air out of Philadelphia's sails in New Orleans because he threw a really bad pick to Marshawn Lattimore. You see that you have a playmaking corner. He can change the game like that. But it just goes to show you the impact I think turnovers have on a game. Like after that pick, Marshon Lattimore, the Saints ran away with week 11, and they did the same thing in the divisional round as well.
And even if that thing is thrown like not ahead of Ertz to where he's just running with it, I mean, he comes down with that ball at the 20-yard line. You're looking at a 3-score lead at the very worst, unless, you know, Jake Elliott comes out there and shanks one. So, yeah, big time momentum.
And it's so interesting because usually Foles, like, I understand why he put this thing on a rope because he's still worried about the hash safety. Like, I get that. But hash safety's taking the post.
So far away.
He's taking the post from Tate, which is what you want this play to do on design. Now, it's a Tampa 2 drop because they're dropping 8. Like, that middle linebacker's getting deep into the hole. So I guess you're worried about him continuing to carry Tate, which allows the safety to come off the hash and get involved with the throw. But usually you see Foles put air under this thing. Usually he's putting that thing with a lot of touch on it. He decides to rifle the thing in there. It's probably why it came short. It's not his typical throw. Arm strength like that is not his. He's like, okay, but it's not his strength.
So I was just looking up some Eagles personnel numbers while we were talking there. And 28%, 12 personnel. And a single solitary play with 3 tight end sets from the Eagles on the day. We expected a lot of 11. That's what we got, those 3 wide receiver sets as opposed to 2 tight ends. That's what we got in this game. We figured it would be more effective, and it was. 50% success rate from the pass and from the run from 11 personnel. Much worse numbers from 12 personnel. They just weren't able to run effectively from 12, which we knew they would struggle to pound the rock against this third-ranked DVOA rush defense, but that would have helped keep the offense ahead of the chains, keep them on the field, not have that time of possession turn so poorly, you know, out of their favor. I'm assuming, despite the low point total, that you like them following our recommendation in terms of the groups that they used. Or after having viewed the film, have you changed your mind?
Yeah, I would like to see more 12. Which, you know, shocking.
Like, how much, though? Maybe like 5 to 10%? Like, maybe like...
Yeah. Yeah. I'll put it this way. I would have liked to have seen... I was fine with the amount of 11 they opened with. By the time we got to quarter 4 and we kind of needed to desperately move the football, I would have been cool with seeing some more 12 personnel. Obviously, you kind of lose the threat a little bit that you're going to run out of it, which is one of the strengths of 12 personnel, you know, kind of forcing base defense because teams believe you could be running the football out of 12. It makes more sense. You have 2 blockers in that regard. But I would have liked to have seen a little more of it because it had been their most effective package, and it's what they had been successful in with Nick Foles over recent weeks. So kind of like, all right, there's a do-or-die drive. Let's go back to what's been good for us, you know, for the past month or so. And really, they stayed with 11, which started out hot and then obviously had like 6 straight drives where the Philadelphia Eagles were unable to score.
Yeah.
I can't complain about it too much because, again, to me, this was a game where poor execution from the quarterback position is what put them down, is what was killing the offense. And then, like, you know, a really untimely mistake from a top wide receiver who's the man, you know, really put the nail in the coffin. Like, to me, there's a lot, this reminds me of like those early middle of the year games where people were really mad at Peterson. And it was like, listen, if people were just making throws and making blocks, like, this wouldn't be a problem. You know, like you can always nitpick on personnel and designs and whatever. Like, you know, like I was calling for like, you know, a little like inside screen, like one of those things that worked so well for them recently. They didn't run that. I mean, okay. But again, if Alshon Jeffrey, like, you know, catches the pass, if Nick Foles is able to hit Zach Ertz on that third down, if he's able to hit Alshon Jeffrey a little better on the Von Bell switch route, like, you know, we're cooking with a little more grease. So it's tricky.
Ben, turn your page to quarter 4, 12:35 left. It's 1st and 10. We kind of touched on this in the last show, but I kind of wanted to go over it again here.
Oh, is this Bradham getting eaten alive?
Yeah, Ben, this was unquestionably the worst game I've ever seen from Nigel Bradham in an Eagles uniform. And this is just one example. And people are saying this is a hold, and I just have no interest in gifting a flag when a dude got blown up. This is a 36-yard run from Mark Ingram. Saints lead with a fullback, Zach Lyon. Bradham steps up and just gets utterly destroyed. In fact, he gets blown up so bad, not only is his gap vacated, but he gets pile-driven into the gap Avonte Maddox was trying to fill, thus effectively taking both of them out of the play. So Lyon gets a 2-for-1 here. So there's just nobody there, and it's a foot race, which, I mean, thankfully Ingram isn't that fast, and Cravon LeBlanc is able to track him down from behind to save it. But front to back, as you say, Ben, stem to stern, I could not have disliked Bradham's entire performance any less, and I wonder what the butterfly effect would have been if his pass coverage snaps, of which there were 40, were swapped with Jordan Hicks, who only had 17.
Bradham had some bad plays. 3rd and 16 was a bad play. Yeah. I don't think this was the worst game he played in the Eagles uniform. I don't.
What can you think of one? Because what?
I can't think of one on the top of my head. But yeah, he's had some rough games this year. He had better games last year, but everybody's up and down games. To me, I simply, New Orleans putting the coverage linebacker into conflict with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. Like, this is what happens to every linebacker who plays New Orleans. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he was, like, exposed in coverage. I haven't met a linebacker who wasn't exposed in coverage. They have Alvin Kamara running across the backfield. It's obnoxious. This play specifically, I'm sorry, but if Trayvon Hester can frickin' anchor against the double team, it's not a problem.
Let's watch Hester here. I'm hitting play. He's got the double, right? Here's the thing. Don't fight two men. Get one guy. Get off one guy. Like, he's trying to fight both guys here. At least that's what my eyes are seeing on the initial view.
So what we're talking about, this is a fantastic teaching tape on how to take a double. So if you do have game pass, or like how not to, but like what you should do. If you do have game pass, again, this is 12:35, quarter four. Trayvon Hester is the three tech play side. And now what he's going to get is he's going to get what looks like inside zone action away. Both his guard, which is his visual key, and his tackle, which is his pressure key, take steps to his right, you know, away from the side of the ball he's aligned. And it looks like it could be inside zone, which means he's expecting a double team. And I said visual key and pressure key. You're looking through the guard into the backfield when you're lined up as the three tech. So that's your visual key. How he moves, you're watching him, is going to impact what you do. If he comes toward you, all right, you've got to maintain leverage in the B gap. It's zone two. If he starts going away from you, all right, you want to collision him. Don't give him a free release up to the second level. It's zone away, right? You want to make sure that you create some traffic on the backside. You also have your pressure key, which is the tackle. You're not looking at him, but you can feel him on your left side coming from your other side. And if he comes towards you, well, you know you're expecting a double team. You know, if he comes to down block you and that guard starts to pull, it's run outside. You've got to go replace a gap. Go get outside that tackle. So you're reading those two players. And when they both give you those zone step, you step into the B gap as he does. And then as they go to double team, You contact the guard, you get your shoulder into the tackle, and you drop your hips and drop your pads. You get low so as to not be moved off that spot, and you hold that point of attack so that when Nigel Bradham comes up to fill against the fullback, he only has to fill against one shoulder of the fullback, right? Like, as this fullback comes up, it comes right at Bradham, the gap is pretty big, and Maddox is coming to fill the new C gap, and Bradham is going to come fill the new B gap, because as the fullback comes into the space, he adds a new gap, right? Like, we go A gap, B gap, C gap. Well, when the fullback gets inserted, there's two sides to the fullback, left shoulder, right shoulder. So he's adding a new gap, you know what I'm saying? And so Bradham would come up and fill the new B gap, and Maddox could fill the new C gap. But as Hester tries to anchor against this double team, his hips are up and his shoulders are up, and it lets the right tackle get control of him, Ryan Ramczyk. And when he does that, he's able to turn Hester out of the gap. He's able to really generate displacement. And now there's a big old B gap and a big old C gap, and Bradham feels the responsibility to take this block head on instead of taking it just on a shoulder, taking half a man, just taking it with one shoulder and leaving one shoulder clean. And when he does that, Zach Klein puts him into Kingdom Come. Bradham is not in a position of strength, right? If you want, like, Bradham's trying to get back into the C gap, which he doesn't have to do. He should know Maddox is there. That's his mistake.
Right.
But the amount of space that Hester loses on the double team is what puts Bradham into a state of conflict. And that's why run fits are so, I mean, we talk about run fits. You run fit as a unit. You run fit as a, everybody has to be responsible for their gap. Hester gets knocked, like you said, Bradham gets knocked into Maddox. Hester gets knocked into Jordan Hicks, who's trying to come support the play side, because Hicks is trying to work back from the weak side, right? And Hicks can't get over there because Hester got driven all the way back into him, and Hicks makes a diving attempt and he fails, you know?
I think if anyone gets held, it might be Hicks there. You see the,
Right, so this is a situation where, like, they're running like ISO, right? This is just
I think
straight.
Take a look at this. Watch the feet of the guys. I wanted to ask you this as I'm watching. Like, watch this center and the left guard. The left guard takes an inside. Is this duo? This might be duo.
I don't think it's duo. And the reason I don't think it's duo is because typically you have to run duo out of two tight end sets, two tight ends to the side. Because you're gonna get the outside.
What if you have a tight end and a fullback?
Right, so you have, that's what I'm saying, you have the fullback to that side, but what you're really seeing here is, in my opinion, which, like, this maybe you're calling this, like, fullback duo. Like, I've never seen duo, like, you know, teams don't use fullbacks that much, so I can't really, you know, testify here.
I don't think I've ever seen fullback duo either, but yeah, it's interesting.
Right, you're seeing two single blocks between tight end and fullback on the play side, which typically on duo you see one and then the two double teams. One of the double teams here is more so backside. At the same time, absolutely, those two double teams on the one tech and the three tech are very duo looking and duo esque. To me, this is just an ISO play because I think on duo you typically stay longer on your double teams and you let like Jordan Hicks and Malcolm Jenkins, the linebackers quote unquote who are coming up, you let them read.
Yeah,
and you see them get off the double teams pretty quick. So to me, this is just ISO. But absolutely, there's similar tones here. Regardless. It's a well-drawn-up play, but, like, this is just goes to show you. This is a quick-hitting play. Yeah. Ingram straight up the gut. He's coming straight for the B-gap right off the fullback's butt. This is immediate. You need to be able to hold the point of attack. Treylon Hester does not do so. And it puts every supporting cast run fit behind him in a little bit trickier of a situation. The hole is bigger for Nigel Bradham to handle. It's bigger for Avonte Maddox to handle. There's more traffic for Jordan Hicks to get through. Ingram's got good enough contact balance, good enough burst to get to the third level. And then, you know, Corey Graham gets blocked by like two guys.
Any other plays that you wanted to touch on? I see we're, again, running late into a topic because that's what we do. We get stuck on one play. And there's so many different things. And this is kind of like, you can't just watch film and go, play. You really gotta like take everything in as you go through it to understand all the different nuances. Cause I didn't notice Hester the first time that I watched it. So that's a good point by Ben. And then we start talking about, is it duo? Is it ISO? You know, all these, and you start to, that's when you start pulling up different video clips and film breakdowns and all this stuff. And that's how you really learn the game. But Ben, any other thing that you wanted to talk about in this game from the All 22 film review before we get to some of these iTunes reviews that we love so much?
Yeah. Last thing I would bring up on the offensive side of the football is having watched the film, I can confirm that in no way, shape or form was like a panting, doubled over, sweating Alshon Jeffrey frantically hustling up to the line of scrimmage before the interception. He's just standing there like a regular person.
Nick like 5 seconds. Is,
right. Now, Foles is late to the slant.
Now, watch what happens to Jeffrey's hands. He runs this. He's expecting. He puts his hands up.
Yeah.
As he puts his hands down, that's when the ball comes. So he's got to shoot his hands back up.
Which on the broadcast film, I was like, it feels like he's looking for it. And what you see is Foles reads the drop of that middle linebacker. He's got a sail concept to the play side, and then it's slant flat to the backside. And that middle linebacker drops towards the slant flat, which usually is okay. We're throwing the sail route. Like we're throwing that idea over there. But he also gains a ton of depth. And so Alshon's able to get like a lot of cushion in front of him, right? There's a lot of space. And so there's hesitation for Foles because typically that linebacker open is don't throw slant flat, but also like he got a lot of depth because they're worried about the deep shot. Probably they're more worried about the outside boundary. And so,
right.
Yeah, ball's late. Foles takes an extra. You can see him take a little bunny hop in the pocket. Ball's late, which probably contributes to the drop slightly. Also, it's usually a catch Alshon makes. That is what mostly contributes to the drop. But anyway, anybody who, like, you know, again, there's no, like, reason to go run a play. Like, you don't have to, but I don't think it was a problem. I think there was a ball was late, and it was a catch Alshon usually makes, and you know, stuff goes wrong.
Again, I thought this was a play that they were running beforehand with Sproles, the run. That was a kill. They had both plays in there. He could have passed or run. So they weren't running to get to the 2 minute warning. Like that wasn't the sole intent of that run. They saw box numbers. They liked what they saw. They killed it to a run. That's the only reason it was a run. Just like the Eagles do all the time. So they weren't trying to get it down to the 2 minute warning. They definitely weren't rushing up because the play went nowhere. Alshon Jeffrey literally has to walk back 5 steps to where he was. And then 20 seconds later, the ball is snapped. Like it's the most calm, no huddle that you're going to see. And plus, I mean, dealing with the cracked ribs and credit to Alshon because something that I noticed in watching the game again from the film, the first two catches, like the big catches that Alshon has, he immediately taps out and goes to the sideline. You can tell like he's in pain.
He does that, what am I trying to say here? He does that like sometimes. Like that's the thing that he's done before. I don't disagree. Like you can tell he's like he's beat up. Like, you know, it's the attrition of the season for sure. But he often does that where he gets a big catch, he immediately walks over to the sideline. He's like, listen, I just picked up 30 yards. I need Gatorade. Like this is ridiculous.
Ben, so that's gonna do it for the All 22 film review here with the Saints and the Eagles. We'll get to these long promised iTunes reviews that you guys have written. Ben, is there anyone that stands out? The one that I love was about you, the person that saw you, Manring JK. 5 stars.
Yeah, interesting.
The topic is, Ben is somewhat squirrely in real life. quote, Ben, I was living in Chicago right by you. I saw you while I was listening to you yelling on the pod, and for a moment I thought about running up to you to say hi until I realized I would look crazy. You guys do a great job. So much love. Oh, okay. I love this.
At any time, if you see me, come up and say hi. It's no, like, you want to look crazy? You look like a person who recognized another person. It's all good.
Let's see here.
Okay, so way back. Oh, found it. Okay. The best, period. 5 stars from Echo Derelict. I once stood next to Nick Foles at one of those urinal troughs, and his piece fell out and made a kersploosh sound only a bar of gold or cinder block hitting the ocean from a great height would make. Also, I can only make love when the sound of Brandon Gowton's voice encompasses me. My wife hates it, but it's the only way I can maintain my Philly special, so she lets me wear headphones. Oh, yeah, this podcast is good. One out of one listener has found this review helpful.
Okay. I love that he calls it his Philly special. Yeah, let's do it.
Absolutely. Also, like, a brick of gold or cinder block. Two things that are, like, equally valuable.
I like this. Somebody created an iTunes account with the username Kissed and Solak Rules with a bunch of S's.
Right, and they misspelled the name of the show?
List and Solak Rule the World. 5 stars. I am a super loyal listener, and I'm always excited when you guys drop a new episode. You guys give the most informative football podcast, and Solak is hyper and funny. Keep up the good work.
I feel like even when now people try to say nice things about me, like, oh, he's hyper and funny. Like, those are words I use to describe squirrels. Like, that's just, this is a problem.
We got to get new music for the show, for the off season. I feel like there's a change.
When I mix a show, when I edit a show, which will be a thing I do at some point, I will choose the intro music, and it will be, it will be a slap. It will be a banger. What's the thing? It slaps. That's what cool kids say. There it is. I got it.
Let's see.
All right. Let's find all the different things that people say about me that sucks. Could be my go-to podcast. 5 star. Boston. Bob. Labo. I was bummed. Bleeding Green Split. Live in Massachusetts. Eagle Bay Podcast. Guys. Blue Mythology. Screw Taylor. Ben is a little squeaky, but that's because he is still a punk kid. Lol. But as a punk kid. Impressive knowledge-wise. Yay, thank you.
JPH150, amazing, 5 stars. I have a crush on Benjamin Solak. Michael Kiss 2 isn't too bad either.
Kiss 2. Where was the guy who told me to always be sick because my voice sounds better when I'm sick? Really like one.
There's so many reviews, dude. Oh, like, it's crazy.
That Boy Driz, finally new content, 5 stars. Long live BLG, always got to show appreciation to the Silent Assassin. Yay, a new episode. Don't know what that is. New content Eagles podcast. Real experts talking about the great work, guys. Side note, Ben gets sick every week, which probably sounds harsher than I tended to, because your voice sounds better. Who was it? Somebody on Twitter when we called out for it told me how much my voice sucks. I gotta find. Did you tweet that from the main account?
Yeah, let me pull that.
As I've always said, like, I've never once before in my entire life, like, been a person who's, like, subconscious about how his voice sounds, like, on, like, voicemails or whatever. And then I started this podcast with you. With your ridiculously perfect voice. And now every time I listen to the podcast, I'm like, I hate how my voice sounds. This was what it was. It was very funny. Matt Trowbridge at Throwbridge.
Yeah.
Ben's voice sounds exactly like his haircut looks. Which,
like, dog.
I don't know how many pictures there are of me on the internet. I'm assuming he's talking about my old profile picture where I had the French crop and the bow tie. Which is very, like, it was a very bougie-looking photo.
Is that the one that I took in Photoshop your hair onto my head?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Which really made me really comfortable. I was so okay seeing that. It was great.
Chris Garball chimed in, and I appreciate that, Chris, @the_CTrain. I mean, it's hard to criticize you guys now. How many reads will it take for Michael Kist NFL to read that without flubbing it? Well, I nailed that one. It's the offense and defense part that I always have trouble with in these doggone previews. And I know that sounds bad being a football podcast and I can't discern between offense and defense, but it happens. We switch up the order in which we do our preview shows. Everyone leave me alone. Everyone focus your attention on how squirrely Ben is.
We should bring up this one here because he'll be upset if I don't bring it up. Also on the tweet, Ben has more cardigans than friends.
Yes.
Which was tweeted out by @Nicholas Solak, who's my wonderful young brother who I love dearly, who makes fun of the amount of cardigans that I own. I don't know why. I think cardigans are very comfortable, and I think they're stylish, and they make me cozy. And he finds it to be, he's in high school, so he's a junior. He finds it to be a great point of humor. And so, yeah, he decided to, you know, send out his one tweet per month, because Twitter's not cool for young kids anymore, by the way. I just learned this. To criticize me on my podcast. So thanks, Nico. Love you, buddy.
So one of the ones I'll point out, I just want to make a broad point here before we get out of here. One of the reviews, and a lot of the reviews are like this. I would spend a lot of time reading all of these, but this is kind of the point of the show here. By Red Cans, fantastic podcast, 5 stars. Listening to these guys make you feel like you're in the film room with a coach breaking down film. Extremely knowledgeable and entertaining. This podcast is an absolute must for very hardcore Birds fans. And the stuff that you guys have written about the content that you like, letting your voice be heard about, we want the in-depth stuff. We want the analytics talk. We want the film talk. We want to really understand the context of what's happening with our Eagles team beyond the box score, beyond the win-loss column, and the amount of you that have chimed in and said that you really appreciate that aspect of this show. I mean, this is really the context show. If you want to know what's going on with the Eagles just beyond the reactionary nonsense, then we like to be your home for that. So we appreciate all of you chiming in with that. It makes us feel great. That's what we're here for. I mean, Montanage, M-O-T-N-A-G-E, says these guys are young, but clearly have done their homework on fundamental NFL concepts on offense and defense. Well worth a listen. I'm not that young. Ben's the young one. I'm an old man. I'm starting to get grays in my beard. But yeah, Ben is incredibly...
I'm already emotional.
Ben's football intelligence for how young he is far beyond mine, and I've been trying to learn this crap for years now, and he only gets better. I try to get better along with him so I don't get outpaced on these podcasts talking about some of these concepts, but we really appreciate you guys chiming in with that. If you want to be more interactive with the show, we would definitely advise you to have the NFL Game Pass to where you can see the coach's film. If not, I'm sure you've DVR'd the game itself. And you can go through and follow through with us and turn your pages, turn your books to the plays that we're talking about here. But overall, we hope that you get some value out of this show other than just entertainment and learn something along the way about football so you can see what to look for, so you can enjoy the game at a higher level, a level that you weren't able to enjoy it before.
All right. Now that that was emotional and nice, can I bring it back to jokes?
Yeah.
Yo, so slack. Wait, okay, I don't know. There's a strong open. 5 stars from Cells with 5 Z's. I always wonder if Ben even knows the team name because he never says it, SMH. But I guess he a true fan. Kiss is a genius. Done. How much to get a video of Ben running the entire route tree? I feel the world needs to see his athletic profile. Number one, not going to happen. Number two, this is the exact 100% the same thing that people then started tweeting at me because... Everybody gets so mad at me because I say Philadelphia and I say not the Eagles. And I don't know. I don't get it. It's very clear what I'm talking about. It's the Eagles podcast.
That seems like people like from Philadelphia, which is weird that they don't say Philadelphia when they live in Philadelphia. All of them say Eagles. Right. They just say Eagles. Like, I don't say Philadelphia. It's a long way to go to say Eagles. Like, right. Philadelphia.
I think I really like... Quicker. Right, so there's a couple things. Number one, I think I really like the word for the name of the city, Philadelphia. Number two, I know people say that I pronounce it with a little too much of a guttural reduction on the E, like I say Philadelphia instead of Philadelphia, which I hear. Right.
It's annoying.
Right. Thirdly, when you're counting fivelets, when you're like on the drum line for 5 years in high school, when you're counting fivelets, right, like five hits in a beat. Philadelphia is 5 syllables, so Philadelphia, 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 Philadelphia. So, like, I'm used to using the word, I think. And also, I don't care, it's just what I say, suck it up. Like, I feel like we produced one episode of Locked on Eagles. We were like, hey, welcome to the world, it's Locked on Eagles, Michael Kiss, Benjamin Solak, the Eagles are great. And then our first response was like, yo, why does Ben never say the Eagles? Like, I feel like it's been since day one that it's just been, Ben has never once said the Eagles on the podcast. So, I'm definitely going to try... Like, I don't know, probably not like an upcoming show because there won't be like, you know, in the season. But next year, I'm going to try to do a whole show where I don't say Philadelphia once. I just say the Eagles the whole time. Just to see what it feels like.
I think there was a show that me and you did because people were really amping up the discussion about it. And I think there was a show that we did a while ago where every time you said Philadelphia, I just came in with a quick Eagles.
I remember this. That was like a multi-show thing. That was a good bit. But either way. Yeah, no, these reviews are tremendous, and we didn't read 10,000 of the ones that are the really kind ones. and the ones that remind us, you know, like for us, like, not only do we try to produce this content, but we also consume it, you know, like we, because we're constantly working on, how does the offense win? How does the defense win? What can they be doing personnel wise? What can they be doing formation wise? What can statistics tell us about why the offense is successful, struggling, defense, successful, struggling? Because that's how we work. That's also the content that we consume. And so these reviews always, at least to me, serve as a reminder. There's a lot of content out there that just isn't worth consuming, that gets shared and it gets discussed and it gets debated, and that just kind of brings the level of conversation understanding down. And that's not like a chirp, or like I'm not like trying to, like, you know, not name a name. Like, there's nobody I have in mind. It's just simply that, like, for us, this is how we understand football and how we like to read about it and learn about it. And we forget that, like, this is a new way for a lot of people, because it's what we've been used to, like, working with in football for quite some time. And so to hear that, like, you know, people say, like, I didn't know what 12 personnel was, and now I can't stop talking about it. Like, you know, I can now, like, see what mesh sit wheel is on the television. It's just really cool, because it is a game that you've watched for 20, 30, 40 years that you're now, like, seeing in a different light. Because, you know, we were able to sit here and somebody gave us money to talk about football for 40 minutes three times a week. So it's tremendous. And we're very blessed. We're very thankful. And so thank you, as always, for listening to the Kissed and Solak show here on BGN Radio. In the immortal words of SClothier29, subscribe to the pod! 4 exclamation points. Or the D-pump-loving squirrel boy will come for your skull. So that's a threat. Which there actually is a Marvel superhero called Squirrel Girl, who's ridiculous, but whatever.
You need to get a part in that movie as Squirrel Boy, and it needs to be a real will they won't they.
Subscribe to the pod, or D-Pump Loving Squirrel Boy will come for your skull. I feel like that's like a really bad gangster name in like a USA movie or something like that, or a television show. Podcasts for the entire off season. We had so many people like, oh, you guys are still doing shows? Heck yeah, we're still doing shows. Senior Bowl shows are coming up, draft preparation shows, free agency preparation shows. These will all be coming up for you over the next week and 2 weeks as we go deeper into the off season. I'm sure we'll also talk about, you know, the playoffs and the championship games and the Senior Bowl and the Super Bowl as they roll through. If you subscribe on whatever app you listen to your podcast, you will get notified when we release a show. And that way you'll know that you never miss anything that we put out. These were a lot of the reviews. We didn't read all the wonderful ones. I'm sure there are ones that we missed, and we're sorry if we did. But 5-star ratings and reviews do so much for us in terms of where the podcast ranks among sports and recreation category. And that obviously looks good for those higher powers that be, who, like I said, let us do this work. So go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Always hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. He's Michael Kist on Twitter, at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. I would imagine probably in the beginning of next week, Mike, we will start to get you guys prepped and ready for the early parts of the Senior Bowl, so we will catch you then.
We all we got, we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bohn. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.